Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
First to a view of the president that you don't hear very often, Donald Trump marked 200 days in office this week, and David Graham writes in The Atlantic that he's accomplished more than his detractors and even some of his allies think. He argues even as the public government sputters, other elements of the Trump administration are quietly reworking the nation's regulatory landscape, especially on the environment and criminal justice. David Graham covers American politics for The Atlantic. He's with us from Durham, North Carolina. David, welcome back to the show. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me back.
You say while chaos seems to reign within the president's sphere of influence in the West Wing, the shadow government is moving along just fine. Well, who is the shadow government and what do they want?
So I'm referring to the sort of cabinet secretaries as a shadow government. You've got these folks who run departments, and the things they do are sort of in line with Trump's priorities, more or less. But they're not the things the president talks about, and they're not the things the president is directly involved in. So you've got the attorney general changing sentencing guidelines and rolling back some protections against civil asset forfeiture, for example, all quietly happening. You've got the EPA and the Interior Department opening up, resource extraction on public land and loosening regulations. So all these things are going on, and they're not necessarily all that well heralded. You hear about some of them individually, but the effect is a fairly big rollback, even as Trump is more concerned about either repeal and replace, for example, or trying to take credit for the stock market.
You know, I thought you might also be referring to people who are career civil servants. So they work in, you know, middle and lower echelons of, let's say, the Justice Department or the EPA, the people that really know how the mechanics of government work. Are they included in your idea of the shadow government?
Well, I mean, I think sometimes when people talk about a shadow government or a deep state is the phrase that's become popular in this administration, that's what they're referring to. And I'm being a little bit tongue-in-cheek in calling these guys, you know, the appointed secretaries, a shadow government. I think in some cases there's a real conflict going on between the Trump appointees who are doing these things and the career employees. We see this at the Justice Department on some things. We see this, I think, most publicly at the State Department, where a lot of career diplomats have been disconcerted by the things that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is doing.
You mentioned border security as one of the places that we haven't heard that much about, I guess, detail-wise, but that where real accomplishments have been made. Are you really just talking about the diminishing number of people that are coming over the southern border, which, by the way, has been happening for a long time, that decrease?
Right, exactly. It is a decrease that's been going on for some time, and it's continued under Trump. It seems in some cases to have accelerated, and it's hard to get a grasp on the numbers at this stage. You get anecdotal reports that you have people saying, you know, I wanted to come to the United States, but now it's very clear to me that I am not welcome and that the government is going to persecute me, and so I'd rather not go. It's interesting you see this decrease in people coming across the border, even as Trump hasn't failed to make any progress on the border wall,
right,
even as his plan to expand the border patrol is still in limbo. None of these things are really happening, but he is seeing some results.
I mean, that kind of points to his rhetoric and not necessarily any kind of policy. Or have there been changes in the policy that are resulting in fewer people trying to get over the border?
It seems to almost entirely be a rhetorical thing.
Huh.
The policies, you know, he has not really succeeded in implementing hardly any of the policies that he talked about the most. You know, the things that are getting done on a policy basis are places where the secretaries are empowered to act. The big things that Trump talked about on the campaign trail, building the border wall and, you know, the travel ban and repeal and replace, they're all stalled or not moving forward.
His environmental policies seem the most far-reaching, and you point out that that is not just it at the Environmental Protection Agency, that other agencies have gotten involved in making some changes here. Point to one thing that is really significant besides Trump's decision not to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord.
I think the single largest one of those is twinned with the Paris Climate Accord, and that's the decision to start rolling back the Clean Power Plan. And this was really the Obama administration's mechanism for coming into compliance with the Paris obligations. It was to cut down on carbon emissions in the U.S. The EPA is trying to push back on that. But there's a bunch of places where they're doing little things that are going to have far-reaching impacts. They tried to delay a methane rule. They were smacked down by a court. They're altering a rule that would be it would affect streams and rivers and smaller lakes. They considered delaying a rule on ozone, although after public pressure last week, they reversed course. The Interior Department is opening up more coal mining on public lands. They're talking about allowing fracking on public lands. So you have all these things that were protections put in place by the Obama administration, but they're really just by executive fiat. And so Trump appointees can just as easily reverse them by executive fiat.
You just mentioned something, though, that I think has been worth observing here, and that's that as the agencies and as the president tries to make changes by these executive orders and these agencies are doing some of this by via policy, courts are getting pretty interventionist and stepping in to block it or to slow it down or to lead to some kind of a court showdown on a lot of these policies. Where do you think that has been most frustrating, I guess, for the administration?
I think on these things like this methane rule, it's a great example. And there's a battle going on over what exactly the powers of an agency are and what it means when a rule is in place. So the Obama EPA issued a rule on methane emissions. It required a long public comment period, various input, and then there's a timeline for that. When Scott Pruitt took over the EPA, he asserted that they could delay these things or roll them back, and they're pushing to see how much they can do. But what courts have said is, look, the rulemaking process is set in stone, and you can't simply roll it back because you don't like it. If you want to change the rule, you have to go through the same long process that was used to put it in place. So we're seeing a test about how much leeway an agency really does have.
David Graham is with us if you've tuned in. He covers American politics for The Atlantic, and he wrote a piece late last week that argued that there is more getting done in the Trump administration than you'd believe at first glance, because, of course, we're seeing a lot of the political gnashing of teeth around not being able to repeal and replace Obamacare and some of the other issues that are front and center. But behind the scenes in what David calls the shadow government, somewhat facetiously, there are things changing and there are things happening. And we're taking note with David about that. If you have a question about his piece and his argument, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. I'm curious, David, and this is a little off topic of what's going on in the agencies, but what you think of the way Congress has stepped in to limit the president's ability to fire Robert Mueller or impede the Russia investigation. In some ways, Congress is kind of picking their battles on this, and I wonder what you observe about that, what it means.
Well, I think what's interesting, one interesting thing about the things he's getting done is they are all, these things I've highlighted, are they're basically all longstanding Republican Party priorities. Deregulation, cutting reg tape, these are the things Republicans have talked about for years. Now, the things that Trump wants to do, like improving relations with Russia, are totally frozen up. And so you see Congress sort of pushing him into a much more traditional Republican direction and trying to block the things that are unique to Trump.
You write in this piece, there's some irony to Trump's greatest victories coming through the executive branch, and it in turn reveals just how far the president's efforts have fallen short of his ambitions so far. What's the reason behind that?
Well, I think there's a lot of it has to do with just not understanding how the system works. You know, Trump came in with no experience in government, and many of the people working in his administration had little experience in government or little experience in the White House, much less than you get in traditional administrations. So they thought that they could come in and they could do these things very quickly and unilaterally. That was Trump's experience in the business world. And what he's finding is the government doesn't work that way. You have to persuade people. You have to move slowly. You have to get a lot of, you know, shareholders in line. And so it's not a process that works the way they thought they did. They thought they could dismantle the administrative state in a matter of months. And in fact, the administrative state is pretty resilient.
You know, it's interesting you use that word shareholders because, I mean, President Trump is one of a long line of businessmen turned and some women turned politicians who argue to the American people that you can run the government the way you run the business. And I'd say we've seen this in our state time and time again. These business people turned politicians encounter exactly what you've described, how difficult this is to do.
That's right. And, you know, you just don't have the same kind of control as in the executive branch, even that you do as an executive. There are all these rules in place. There are people who have things they want. And, you know, it was interesting. Before the election, a couple George W. Bush cabinet secretaries who had been in the business world wrote pieces warning, look, it doesn't work that way. You can't just come in and sweep through and change things. We see Rex Tillerson having the same problem at the State Department, where initially there was great enthusiasm for a kind of managerial rethink, and now people are turning against it.
And what do you think is happening inside the State Department that is particularly frustrating to him? Is he trying to make internal changes, or is he trying to guide foreign policy in a way that's being stymied?
It seems to be a little bit of both. You know, he's talked about wanting to cut the budget and make things more streamlined. But what we see is anecdotally reports that he's kind of micromanaging and getting involved with things that he hasn't otherwise. And, you know, he thinks he can sort of smooth things. But in fact, what we see is him trying to reach down and figure these things out. He doesn't know how they go. And he's realizing he has to rely much more on lieutenants and a decentralized structure than he did when he was running Exxon.
A couple numbers for you from the CNN poll that's out this morning. 59% of Republicans strongly support President Trump. That's 10 points lower than it was the last time CNN polled, which I think was a couple months ago. 73% of Americans say that they do not trust what the president or the White House says. What are the larger implications of that?
It gets to be a vicious cycle, I think. One reason you see approval dropping is that Trump isn't moving forward on his major priorities. The things that are getting done are these kind of behind-the-scenes, slow things. So people start to see that nothing's happening, and they get frustrated. As they get frustrated and they lose confidence in him, that means he has less political capital. It's less easy for him to, for example, try to get Congress to do his will. He'll get less done. So he has to break that cycle if he wants to go anywhere. But it's very hard to break that cycle. And he does. He's not somebody who seems to enjoy changing course.
I think it's worth explaining what you've just said about the agenda, though, because he still has a strong support from his base, and he still has Republican majorities in the House and the Senate. So what is it about low poll numbers that means that the president may even have a hard time passing his agenda through majorities of his own party? What's the connection there?
I think one thing we've learned in the last month or so is that it's a little bit misleading to simply say that he has majorities in Congress. You know, on the Obamacare repeal process, for example, what we saw is there were really two or maybe three Republican parties in Congress. Some wanted to fix Obamacare and change things. Some wanted to throw it out entirely, and they couldn't agree. And that's why they couldn't get to 50 votes. Trump tried to bully senators. He thought he could use the power of his Twitter and his personality and the support he has from Republicans to get them in line. And what we saw is, in fact, that didn't work. He just doesn't have that kind of sway with them anymore. They're not afraid of him. And that's, you know, once that dam breaks, it's hard for him to pull a lot of power on them and to sort of use leverage. And it becomes a vicious cycle, I think.
David, a call for you here from Susan in Minneapolis. Susan, what are you curious about?
I'm curious about Tom Price at Health and Social Services.
Okay.
And what kinds of changes he is attempting or has put in place through his ability to use the power of the agency.
Okay. And David, this is a timely question because I think Tom Price is meeting with the president today, isn't he? In New Jersey?
Yeah. Right. He's meeting about opioid things. I think the place to watch Price and HHS is in the next couple of weeks here. Trump has repeatedly threatened to find ways to sort of effectively sabotage Obamacare, canceling these cost-sharing reductions that help make sure that people can afford insurance. There are other places he could do that. They could start pulling out executive branch support for elements of the law. And that could potentially make the law collapse or fare poorly. So he hasn't, while they've been trying to repeal, Price has been flexing a little bit less on those fronts. But if Trump decides that it's worth forcing collapse, Price would probably be the mechanism for that to happen.
Yeah. David, thanks very much. And by the way, I should add that I think the president, after meeting with Tom Price, as you noted on the opioid issue, the president is giving a briefing this afternoon on that. David, thank you. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks so much.
David Graham's piece was in The Atlantic, in which he argues that the Trump administration is getting more done than than I guess the news coverage actually reflects. You can read about that, and I'll tweet out a link.